Welcome to Threshold Stories, Crossing Thresholds, one story at a time. I'm your host, Jeff Gora. Hello, everybody. This is Podcast 115, 2022 World Championships in Multisport Endurance Racing. So let me just jump into this podcast by saying that the last two podcasts caused me to delay doing this one quite a bit. I traveled to Romania to compete in World Championships with the expectation that that would be the reason I would go. It makes sense. You don't book a trip to the beach if you don't plan to go to the beach. Well, I ended up spending at least as much time, if not more time, working with Ukrainian refugees and their problems than I did actually competing and racing. So it ended up being called a world championship trip, but it was more like a refugee trip. So let me just jump now, since I've completely talked through the refugee side. Let's talk about the real reason I signed up to do this in the first place, which were the world championships. So the town of Tugurmeresh was selected to be the host city for multi-sport endurance racing, and there were four different races that were eligible to compete in. I chose to compete in three of them. Two of them I qualified for, meaning I competed at the national championship level and did well enough to get invited. And the other one was a relatively brand new sport, and each country could decide using whatever metric they wanted to who to invite. And they said, if you've qualified for any one of the other two duathlons, you're automatically qualified to do the cross duathlon if you want to. So I said, let me do that. So before I jump into what the races were like, let me share with you from the screen right here my rankings here. So you can see I've started nine times world championship level events, which is crazy. Most people never get zero. I'll get above zero, and I got nine so far. But you can see I did three of them this year, June the 6th, June the 10th, and June the 12th. So I'm going to go through these kind of one at a time to share with them what's unique. So the first event I did was cross duathlon. It was poorly attended, to say the least. There were not a lot of athletes who even knew about it, let alone signed up to do it and qualified for it. So the event starts as in our case, it was a 4 mile and change trail run, two laps of 2.1 miles or so. And then you had a 12 and a half mile bike in the woods. And then you have a 2 mile run at the end. Well, I've done a lot of trail running. I've won ultramarathons. I didn't feel anything special needed to be considered before doing the trail race. And in retrospect, that thinking was in fact correct. But I didn't have any experience whatsoever on a mountain bike, at least in a competitive sense. I'd ridden them, you know, on flatsy, funsy onesies, things like I'd experienced here in North Carolina, but it wasn't what I was getting into. So let me start off by saying we took a recon trip, so you can see from this picture here, checking out the course prior to actually doing the event. So here's a picture of a mountain bike, one of ours in our group, was not mine, and it showed the trail we were going to be riding on. Well, that looks pretty fun, or at least very least very serene. Well, it wasn't like that for much, because you're either very much turning left, right, left, right, left, right on switchbacks, and typically those switchbacks are either going straight up or straight down. So it was pretty challenging. So we did a trial run of the course. So it was a four-loop bike course, and each loop was a little more than 3 miles. Not much, but a little more than 3 miles. Well, it took our group almost 30 minutes to do a three-mile bike ride. That's about 10 minutes per mile. If I power walk, I'm at about 11 minutes per mile. So that is very close to walking speed. And at first, when you do it, you don't have any sense at all that what you're about to get into is going to be rigorous. We took our rental bikes to the top of this specific hill in downtown TM and went to the park where we were told the race was going to be. It had already been blocked off. The course had already been marked for people like us to do a trial run. So four of us took our bikes there just to try out the course. The one girl in our group who ended up winning her age category, she didn't struggle with it much at all because she mountain bikes a lot. The rest of us, though, it was a slugfest. We were having to get off our bikes and walk it frequently. In fact, during the trial run, I wrecked my bike. I fell over once, had to get back up and wipe the dust off of my shoes. But the trail was pretty nice here. But on race day, if you take a stare what it looks like, here's a picture of an American kid. He's climbing a hill, and you can see he's having to stand up to do it. And he's doing the best he can to get up there. Here's a Spanish guy descending, having to position himself as best as he can after he just finished a very steep climb to keep going. For me, the spot where this was taken, I was getting back on my bike after pushing it up the hill. He was good enough so that he could just ride up the top of the hill. When we hit the finish line, you can see how dirty I am in this picture here of me crossing the finish line number two. My left side had gone down. I fell actually twice during the race, and each time it was on my left side. In fact, today's date is July the 11th, and last week I went to see my primary care physician because my left arm is still not healed, and she wants me to get an MRI to look at what sort of soft tissue damage is done, because this wreck occurred on June the 6th, and I shouldn't still be feeling real pain picking up a 10-pound weight with my left arm literally 5 weeks later, so she wants me to look at it. You can see by the shoes I was wearing, my shoes are quite dusty and dirty because it was truly a cross duathlon. It was, when I say cross duathlon, it means it was off-road and all that went with being off-road. So I finished the race. I came across the finish line and they announced that I was in sixth place for my age category. My first response was, wow, that's pretty good. I've never done as well as sixth place in the world. Normally, you know, the first time I ever did a world championship, so my ranking was 52 out of 68. And I was assuming that, you know, this would be the same sort of outcome. Well, it actually was the same sort of outcome. There are only seven people in my age category, so I ended up coming sixth in that event. What I had going for me, though, is after that event was over, I was able to return my mountain bike and ponder the event a little bit more. So when I say ponder the event, let me try to draw a picture of it. So we're on the side of a mountain in Transylvania, which is a state or a subset of Romania that was famous, right, for Dracula. And there was a time on the bike when I was just fatigued. I'd gone close to, 2 hours riding on the bike, and I had to go to the bathroom. And I was in a segment of the trail where there was nobody else currently riding with me. So I just stepped off the bike and went. And I remember as I was looking around, I saw the light shimmering through the leaves, shining down onto the forest floor in Transylvania, and realized that I didn't know what any of this growth was. These weren't plant varieties that I was familiar with. They weren't hickory trees. They weren't oaks. They weren't what I was familiar with. There weren't any pines. And I thought, this is so cool that I'm in the middle of Transylvania, literally in the middle of a world championship, and I've got this great view of the forests, knowing good and well that I'll probably never come back here again. I'll never see these forests again. This is the one time in my life I'm going to experience that, and I'm going to treasure that. For me, that bathroom stop was actually the high point of the race. It wasn't hitting the finish line and getting the medal and cheering everybody else on who still was coming in behind us. For me, the high point was that, which is pretty rare. For the second race, there were a lot of photos taken that I can share, but I think the primary takeaway that makes this race two different than race one was race two took place here on the Transylvania Motorway on the Transylvania motorway. So it was basically a race course for cars, and they opened it up for our event specifically. So you can see from the picture here of how they tried to go to market with it. But they got some great pictures of us here at the finish line at the Transylvania motorways, just completely soaked because the sun was shining down on the blacktop, and the blacktop was of course absorbing it all, but it was reflecting an awful lot of the heat. So here's a view from above of what the course kind of looked like. So you can see there's a lot of turns that we had to do on the bicycle, and there was a lot of lapping going round and back and round and back. So we didn't just keep going in the same direction. We would go one direction almost all the way around the Transylvania motorway and then turn around and go all the way back and so on and so forth. So we ended up doing, if I memorized the count correctly, I think we ended up doing 5 laps on the bicycle of something like 8 kilometers, or maybe it was 4 laps of 10 kilometers, but we never did the entire lap. We always did a portion of it. And that represented the bike portion of our event. So here's another view from above, view number two. You can see the different layers. So we'd loop down and climb a little bit and then loop back up and then climb a little bit and loop again and then reverse it. You know, go downhill, turn, go downhill, turn, go downhill, and so on and so forth. It was a pretty interesting track like that. And here's another view from above, view number three, I call it. So let me talk about the run portion of this race for a second here. So the first run was a 10-kilometer run, and they decided what they wanted to do was make that into 2.5-kilometer loops. So we basically left an area of the race course, left the race course and crossed over a bridge, turned left and went back down the bridge and looped it back. So each time, each loop was two hill climbs. So you went up a hill, down a hill, and you were back to where you started. So you ended up running up hills 8 total times on the first run and 4 total times on the second run. And you could immediately see the impact of people's training within the first 5 minutes of the race. A lot of people would hit the hills and you could see the grimace on their face change as they would either try to stay with competitors and force their body to go harder than it was conditioned for, or they would immediately poop out and you could see their strides shorten, they wouldn't be lifting their legs as far, and they went from their traditional whatever pace they had and immediately they would be adding 2 minutes per mile to their pace. So I could see that, and it didn't matter if it was male, female, young or old, you could see who was the better conditioned runner almost immediately when we started that section of the race. On the second run, it was just half of the first run, but for a lot of people, that second run was substantially harder because they emptied themselves out on the bicycle. So the bicycle course was really flat. Even though I was on a rental bike, I still averaged 20 miles an hour, which is great for a rental bike. I don't ever have the expectation of going that fast on a rental bike. And I was just impressed at how organized it was at the finish line. Here's a picture showing the times for everything on a big board up here, but you could see as you were coming in other people in your age category in your group how they were doing, and as soon as you crossed you could see how well you did. That was a pretty neat addition to the whole thing. Here's a picture showing what the bikes look like as the bikes would go into a section and turn around and zoom back out as best as they could. As you can see the markings on the blacktop, you can see that it was for car racing, motorcycle racing, whatever else. This was the least of it for us. And you could see some of the hills were real. Here's a picture of climbing, going up a hill. There was a guy from Poland behind me, another guy from the UK, I think, behind us, all going right to left, coming out of an area. So that was non-incidental as well. And it was a ton of fun, I would say. When I finished that race, I was very chatty. Food options weren't that good, but it was great and easy to get hydrated. And I knew I had a whole day off. The next day I had completely off before I had to do my third and final race. In that race, I ended up getting something like 20th or 22nd. And there was like 26 people total in that, which kind of makes sense. I was expecting some sort of outcome like that because I'd gained too much weight to be competitive on the run. Last time I did really well at a standard duathlon, it was about 17 pounds lighter than I am now. And the number one place that shows up, for me at least, is on the run. On the bike, unless it's a really hilly course, you know, as long as my power is going up in ratio to my weight, it's not a big deal. But on the run, it mattered a lot, especially with all that uphill, downhill stuff. I got to watch on this race two of the athletes whom I'd coached, well, three of them, I got to watch them perform. So on the male side, Connor and Jordan decided to, well, they didn't decide. They ended up racing in the same lot together. And you could quickly see the difference in them. Connor and Jordan are both great little athletes. They both know how to focus when they run. They know how to kick their own butts when they get on the bike to go really hard. And I could tell that they were both going pretty fast compared to what they're training at for both on the run. When I saw them on the bike, I could see that Connor was going, you know, fast on the bike as well, even though he too was on a rental. And Carolyn did great. Carolyn got the silver medal. Granted, her category only had three people, but she got to connect with the girl who won gold. Luisa is her name, Middleditch. And I invited Luisa to be a part of Threshold Academy. I thought she would be a great addition. She and Carolyn could train together. They came in 1-2, first gold and two different races. So, well, Carolyn got DQ'd on the second race, but they were still right there next to each other for much of the race, and I thought that'd be great. And I got to see the elites race as well. So the elite represents, well, they're supposed to be the best in the world. And you could see they were, you know, on a 2.5-hour race, 2-hour race, they were coming in 30 minutes, 40 minutes ahead of, you know, people who were doing quite well in other age categories because these guys were the best of the best. And it rotates. 1 year it's been Belgians. 1 year I saw a guy from Brazil do well. UK. This year it was French people who did really well. So there's really no historic specific country that dominates this sport, like other sports that are out there. Anyways, the third venue was in the heart of downtown Târgu Mureș. And the best part about that was, is the distance from our hotel room to transition was about 100 yards. So we took our bikes down the stairs, down the elevator, stepped out the front door, crossed the street, and that was bike check-in. And after we checked our bike in, it was just a few, few yards till we were able to rack our bike, and we were basically done. So a lot of people were very anxious to get out there and get ready, especially people only doing one race. Well, this was my third world championship of the week, and so I very much took my time getting up, eating breakfast. You know, I took my bike out to go check in much, much later than most athletes because I knew there wasn't going to be any value to standing out there in the sun, and I thought that was awesome. I told my folks who I was coaching to go as late as they reasonably could because sitting out in the sun like that is only going to take energy away from you. I said, just stay in as much as is reasonable, no matter how anxious and ready to race you are, because you're not going to improve your times getting out there an hour early. If anything, you'll lower your time. And you're there to race, and your time is what matters. So I tried to convince them of that message. Yet anxiety sometimes wins the day, and people get out there early to take photos, talk to people, and all that goes with it. So the run on this course got whacked out care of the church down the street. So the original intent of the run was to do these long ovals right in the heart of the main road in the downtown section of TM. And I don't remember how many loops they originally intended for us to do, but they ended up getting a message back from the church that was on that road saying, we have a special day and we can't have you running past our church, all these people all the time. It's going to impact the flow of our religious service. So I'm going to say a day before, maybe it was 2 days before, they changed the course and shortened it. So we ended up having to do, if I remember correctly, something like 8 laps on the first run, or 7 laps. I mean, I can't even remember right now. We had several laps we had to do on the first run, and they totaled 5 kilometers. So it's not the case that these were really long laps. Some of these laps would go by in single-digit minutes, and you'd be done with the lap, and you'd already be on getting ready to get on to the next lap. So a lot of people miscounted. If you stare at the race results, you can see two people who run at the same speed, one guy getting done 3 minutes ahead of the other. Well, you know what that means. One guy did one more lap than the other person. Well, it got even worse. The bike course, they had us doing 5 laps on the bike course, but it wasn't really 5. It was 5 and. They had a little section of addition there. And so some people miscounted the number of laps on the bike course. My good friend Ed, who I've done several of these events with, he ended up, we did the run together for the most part. For the bike, we weren't together, but at the end, we converged again. And when it came time to turn in transition and get off the bike and finish the race, he kept right on pedaling. He just thought, oh, I got to do another lap. And it wasn't until he realized that no one was with him anymore that he went, oh, where'd they all go? I better turn around and get off my bike and start running. Well, he did, and it was consequential. He lowered his ranking, but it was one of those moments where you just get so caught up in the event, the flow, the demand of the hard race, that you lose count of the very simple things in life. So the International Triathlon Union decided in their wisdom afterwards to basically give people a pass on screwing up the first run because it was they took a little bit of the ownership on that. But if you miscounted on the bike, you didn't do 5 laps, you only did 4.5 or whatever, or if you didn't do the requisite number of laps on the run, they were going to disqualify you. I can't say what the percentage of people DQ'd was, but within my group of 4, or my group of 5, I guess Ed's part of our group, 2 of the 5 ended up getting DQ'd because they couldn't get their counting correct, or they didn't get their counting to match what they were expected to count. And then the ITU completely got their timing wrong, too. Normally, on a 5K run, I'll get in 21 minutes, 22 minutes maybe. For the second run, I was expecting something like half of that plus 15%, half of that plus 20%. So instead of being 21, 22 minutes, I was thinking it's probably going to be reasonable to end up with like 12 or 13 minutes for a 2.5K because I'm fatigued. There was a lot of climbing on the racing. Well, the ITU clocked my time for the run 2 at 27 minutes, 35 seconds. So for 1.5 miles. They said it took me 27 and a half minutes. I can walk that. I'm sure of it. I could walk that right now if I needed to. No way. And as I stare at the other people who did the race, they were ending up with very similar numbers. It wasn't just me who was coming up with something that was that wackadoo. My first thought was, well, they started the clock as soon as I got off the bike. Well, you really can't do that because you have to drop the bike, take off your helmet, take off whatever you're going to take off, and then you have to put on running shoes and run out and start on the course. And there's a little timing mat. So that normally takes something like a minute. Now, for some people, it's 90 seconds. Some people, it's 50 seconds, but it's something like a minute. So that could have made that time as low as 26 minutes, but still, there's no way, Jose, I was running that slow. There's not a chance. So I felt like that last race was nothing more than a have fun race, and I don't really have any interest in staring at the rankings or the timings on that. And I'm sure the ITU has learned from that. Now, that said, as I review all three races, I feel like I got a crazy unique experience. The first race was in the heart of Transylvania's mountains. A lot of greenery. And that was poorly attended. There were not many athletes that did that. The second race was well attended, and that was on the Transylvania motorway. So that was way out in the middle of the country. Cool views of everything in all directions. And it was on a highly paved, very predictable surface. Well, the third race was in the heart of downtown. So it was a divided road. It had a lot of climbing, zooming in and out between buildings, a lot of turns associated with the bike route. And the run was a counting game more than anything else. It wasn't really a run as much as it was keeping track of how many times you'd done stuff. The views, though, were so different. The views in the forest versus the motorway versus, you know, an ancient medieval town. I don't know how ancient it is, but a medieval town with lots of architecture all around you to distract you, especially when you're on the run. There's no value in looking down at blacktop. But as you look up, you say, wow, every one of these races was a uniquely different experience, and it's all within the same multi-race championship. It's kind of like I felt like I got the Summer Olympics, the Winter Olympics, and the Super Bowl all in the same week, so to speak, as far as venues go. And that was really interesting. For me, the complexity with that, though, is as I transition out of this conversation to the what's next, is I imagine for next year's World Championships, I again qualified for two, that they're going to offer the cross duathlon as well in that venue as well. And I don't know anything about that other venue. It's Ibiza, Spain, so it's a tourist island. European tourists as well as international tourists go there. So it's very much geared for people to come and hang out at the beach and have fun. But it's also, just like Mallorca, it's got a lot of cycling routes on it. So I don't know what the World Championships there are going to look like. If that's possible, then I'm going to have a very unique venue for the cross duathlon. Even if I still kind of suck on the bike, I might darn well sign up and do it again just because of the value of that experience. What's different next time, though, probably above everything else, is my wife intends to go with me. She's traveled with me to something like half of the national championships I've done, but she's never done any of the nine world championships. So this will be the first time she's ever got to see this and meet some of the international athletes that go with it. Another takeaway, and I'm going back to the start here, from this specific event was all that happened at the Parade of Nations. So at the start of every world championship, there's an event that inaugurates it, right? So you've seen the Olympics, you've seen world championships. I mean you've seen parades of nations at the start of those. For us, the Parade of Nations was unique. For me, one, because I was the flag bearer for the U.S., and that came up in a previous video. But the opening ceremonies had a lot to do with the Roman invasion of what was called something else, the valley we were in that's part of Transylvania, and the Romans conquering them and it becoming mini Rome, therefore the name Romania, and all the citizenry that currently lives in that area, they're multi-generation ago immigrants from Rome. And here's some video footage of some of the dancing we got to see there. So what's next? I don't really know if I have a big cycling event, a big running event set up for the rest of 2022. I'm considering an ultra marathon at the end of October, but I am going back to the Himalaya in early October. If any of you who are listening to this want to go with me, please talk to me. I had a family of four that dropped out from wanting to go to the Himalaya. This is the second year they dropped out. So I have four spots that I didn't intend to have available, and we're leaving on that trip on October the 8th. There'll be a link at the bottom in the description there you can click on if you're interested in joining us. Podcast 116 is coming up next, and that is going to be first of two conversations, only one of which will be a podcast on the Roe v. Wade changing. Stay tuned. Thanks for listening to this chapter of Threshold Stories, Crossing Thresholds, one story at a time. Ready to cross more thresholds with me in 2 weeks. If you have any questions, feel free to reach out to me directly. You can find me on LinkedIn or on my Facebook page at Jeff Gora Team USA.